You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
Book club, mutiny book club
now, and I myself have read over 15 separate books. 8 of them were Far Side collections, obviously. 3 of them by William Burroughs, 1 book by Ernest Hemingway, and then 8 Cosmopolitan magazines. Mutiny book club, book.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Mutiny Book Club podcast. Thank you, audience. This month, we are discussing Atessa Moshfegh's My Year of Rest and Relaxation, and here's a little snippet from it. I went home and went to sleep. Outside of the occasional irritation, I had no nightmares, no passions, no desires, and no great pains. And during this lull in the drama of sleep, I entered a stranger, a less certain reality. Days slipped by obliquely, with little to remember, just the familiar dent in the sofa cushions, a froth of scum in the bathroom sink like some lunar landscape, craters bubbling on the porcelain when I washed my face or brushed my teeth, but that was all that went on, and I might have just dreamt up the scum. Nothing really seemed real. Sleeping, waking, it all collided into one gray, monotonous plane ride through the clouds. I didn't talk to myself in my head. There wasn't much to say. This is how I knew the sleep was having an effect. I was growing less and less attached to life. If I kept going, I thought, I'd disappear completely, then reappear in some new form. This was my hope. This was the dream. All right, that is a pretty grim a summary of what this book's about.
Yeah, I feel like the I got rid of my internal monologue, yay,
yeah.
Is very scary to me.
I killed my inner life. Did you?
It's everyone's dream, I think.
I think it is a seductive idea.
It is a little bit, that's how I feel when I spend one night on the couch doing nothing, watching movies of Whoopi Goldberg.
I love that it was Whoopi Goldberg and Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Because it's so specific, but how could you not be a little obsessed with Whoopi Goldberg and Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
They're the best.
Yeah.
If I had the means and the luxury of having a year of rest and relaxation, no one would see me ever again. I would absolutely do this.
I think that's almost every comic's daydream.
Yeah,
it's
like, to just.
What if I just never went back to comedy again?
I mean, it sounds vaguely like a depressed person's daydream.
There's a little column A, a little column B. There's a lot of overlap among depressives and comedians. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Speaking of which, by the way, so I'm Jen Colick.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That's Byron Graham. And our guest is Gabby Reed.
Hi. Woo.
Hi.
Do you want to throw out our credits? That's probably a good hostly thing I should have done. Thank God you're here, Jen.
Literally half an hour ago, I was like, I don't really have to do, like, Byron does everything. I don't have to do anything.
Byron can barely keep his head up. He's talking in the third person. We're all in trouble. You are driving the ship.
Noted. Okay. So you guys are comedians. I'm a writer and editor. Gabby, you're also a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And a roller derby, right?
And a roller derby.
I'm a roller derbier.
Hell yeah.
I play roller derby, yes.
I was writing the description for this. And I was like, what is the word? Is it derbier?
It's a roller derby and an assessor.
I settled on roller derby dynamo because if you can't find the right word, make an alliterative sentence.
It's like people who is like, you're an improver. It's, not quite. Hey.
I mean, improviser is an existing word.
Yes. No, that's that's the right one.
It
that's
still also, feels yeah, terrible to say, though. Or is that just me?
Roller derby nefesis just nicer improver.
I feel like, would it be like taxidermist, like a roller derbist? Like, that
sure.
Doesn't sound right.
Why not? Nothing sounds right now. It's all wrong.
By the way, we also all took Ambien before recording
we
this.
Yes.
We'll have no memory
to stay
that this
true
transpired.
To the yeah.
Thank God.
Have either of you guys taken Ambien before?
No.
No. God, no.
I had a bit. It's a bit of lost time. I had like a prescription in late high school. And you do like, you take it and then go do stuff that you have no memory of.
What?
And luckily, I just like made food in the kitchen when didn't clean up.
In the middle of the night? Or when would you
yeah,
take it?
I would,
I'm
like,
assuming.
I mean, it was in high school, so I still lived at my parents' house. But I'd get up in the morning and there'd be like flour and broken eggs in the kitchen.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, I know I'm the culprit here.
Your parents are like, this is great. No. We have a cook now.
No, they didn't care for it. They were very concerned. It's frightening to lose time. And
yeah.
I can't imagine, like, you know, like when she sees the Egyptian employees at the bodega, she's like, what did I do last time? Mm-hmm. I can't mm-hmm. lose this bodega. Mm-hmm. This is all I have.
I love that fucking bodega, by
yeah.
the way. I love that place and those people so much.
Yeah.
I said this in the Facebook page too, like this is the first time that I recognized my own New York in a novel, which was a really weird experience. Like, does that mean I'm old now? Like, I don't know what, because it's already gone.
What
if it's
years
on
were
paper,
you there?
Right? I was there
pre-9/11?
For my entire life until 2008.
Oh, okay. Well,
I grew up
New
in
York?
Queens. Yeah. So yeah, I was there for all the things. And then I said, I think I'm becoming an alcoholic and my ex-boyfriend might throw me in front of a train, so I'm going to get the fuck out of here. And I came here.
It's a good reason to
yeah.
get out, yeah.
Yeah.
I ran away too.
Nice. Where'd you run from?
I ran from San Diego, California.
Fuck yeah.
Woo.
Running away from your problems is a good solution.
It's funny, in that, the two-thirds of the New Yorker profile I wrote about Otessa Moshfegh, I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. Sure. It's
I thought you looked it up because you were so confident.
No, I looked it up. I tried to get one of those, like, you know, how do you, it's called Pronouncepedia or something, or Pronounce Wiki, and all the links were different sounds. It was like Moshfegh. It was, I have no idea.
No, dude, here's what you do, though. You find, like, on YouTube
yeah.
or, like, on NPR or some
yes.
shit, like, someone interviewing her because
yeah.
they announce her. Because
Terry Gross is going to fucking nail it.
Hell yeah. yeah.
You know, she's
that's
not getting
job.
It wrong. She's fascinating. And the theme of, like, having to leave New York, she had to do that, too. She had to leave. She moves around, like, every couple years. She's living in China. Now she lives in California. And... she seems, like most of her protagonists, a very troubled woman. She seems like she's, she talked about for a full year, every day she would Google image search dead things. Just,
okay.
just like, you know, like.
Cool.
I could definitely see her doing that.
Well, like the unnamed protagonist of this book, which is an interesting thing. It took me a while. It was like, oh, yeah, we don't actually know her name. Also does that where she like deliberately tries to think of like River Phoenix or mm-hmm. Martin Luther King getting shot and just feels nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I just feel like this disconnect from your feelings is enviable, but also you're kind of broken.
Like, well, yeah, because it's depression. Is the thing that
it's
does a, that.
It's what
like, that's what it feels like to be depressed.
Or a sociopath, either one.
Yeah, either one.
I mean, I think that you can tip the scale from just, like, when the depression gets that bad, like, everything is tainted by it. So
oh, I
like,
mean, I've, you know.
You know, like, if you have, if you have these, like, stormy feelings mm-hmm. just about yourself all the mm-hmm. time, it's going to spill over onto everybody, and you get a little sociopathic.
Well, that's, like, the one of the most interesting things to me about, I kind of said this earlier. I really identified with this character. She's also a complete fucking asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Right up to the
yeah.
end, she's
terrible,
a complete fucking
terrible
asshole.
Terrible friend.
And that's a new experience for me. Like, I feel like there are so many depictions of very troubled or like sort of problematic like male antiheroes, especially like Western pop culture, women don't get that often. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Nurse Jackie and like that girl who killed her parents with an axe, I guess, maybe.
Lizzie Borden.
Yes, thank you. But like other than that, you don't get a lot.
Right.
No, I mean, I think it's a bit reductive, but I've heard people say that like she writes like Bukowski characters who are women. And I do think, because I hate Bukowski, but, and I think she's a great writer. I didn't love the way this book ended, but I love the prose. And I've started reading her other book, Eileen, and I like it a little more. But yeah, there's no bullshit to it. There's no apologies for these difficult characters who are terrible to everybody that they know.
She's really good at getting the point across.
Yeah. It's also a little gross, too. Like, when she gets fired from the gallery, she takes a dump on the floor.
I loved that.
I think that it's weird that how quietly revolutionary that is to have this, like, gross, mean-spirited woman as the centerpiece of your novel.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of layers to it, mm-hmm. also. Like, the way that she treats her friend like crap is the exact same way that her mother treated her like crap.
Yeah.
You know, it's like she, like, nothing she does is ever good enough. She has a fucking complaint about everything. Even when Riva, her friend, is like trying to connect and trying to, like, you know, she says, "I love you," and the narrator ignores her. She tells her, like, "The guy that I'm having it, my married boss who I'm having an affair with is like breaking up with me and transferring me out because he doesn't want to even like deal with me anymore." Mm-hmm. "And by the way, I'm pregnant and I have to have an abortion. And like, I don't know if I should even tell him," like, and all of this stuff. And it's like in the background.
Yeah.
Like,
I do wish that like there was a bit more insight into Riva. I think that's why the ending rang a bit hollow. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for it, but I think that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I have the feeling like the three of us did not care for the ending, but maybe in very different ways. Gabby, why did you not care for the ending?
I was just like, fuck. It just made me like, I really wanted there to be more pages. I didn't want it to end there. You know, she wakes up out of her slumber and everything is just like okay now.
That's not
real. That's not like, maybe she had brain damage from all of the fucked up chemical, all of the releasage. It really does mess with your head when you are on prescription drugs for long enough. And then her being like, "I saw Riva awake. And that was fine." Like, it's yay.
In the meantime, it's a woman who may or may not be Riva jumping out of one of the burning twin towers, which is a thing that does not entirely surprise me.
Well, when she said, "I'm going to work in one of the twin towers," I was like, oh boy, in a couple months you should skip work.
Yep.
9/11. The thing that bothered me, I wanted to read a long, luxurious description of Trevor dying a fiery death.
That would have been great.
She denied us of that. He was the worst.
Disgusting.
And yet very realistic.
Oh god, yeah, that guy exists.
Thousands of that guy exists.
Oh, think of the men I've met like that. And my guard immediately goes up. Like, she always went back to that. But when I meet a man like that, or even like the suspicion of a man like that, I'm just like, hello, sir, fuck you. That's like, that's my attitude towards that type of person all the time.
Well, and this is another, like, that's, I think, one of the ways, though, like, through that relationship that you actually get to see, like, it's not just that she fucking hates everyone around her.
Yeah.
Like, that's her hating herself. You know? And also deciding to be basically dead for a year, I guess, is also because she doesn't want to be around herself in her own brain. But yeah, I don't know. I had a big problem with the ending for a couple of reasons. It kind of, like, 9/11 went without saying.
Sure.
Like, you start your book in, like, May of 2000, and you end in August of 2001. You fucking know what's going to happen.
Yeah, like, exactly.
There were villages in Kenya that sent, like, farm animals to us as, like, condolences. Like, yeah. Everyone in the goddamn world knows what happened. You don't... Also, I would have been, yes, very happy to just go on thinking, like, well, sucks that Reva died, but, like, hey, that Trevor asshole, he burned to death, too. That's really great.
That would have, you know, put a little sugar in that medicine.
Yeah.
That's how the saying goes. Yeah.
That's right. Yum.
Let's talk about Dr. Tuttle. I love that character. I love how dark it is that each time she goes in to see her, she's like, yeah, both of my parents died.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, you have a history of non-binary paradigms. Here's a fucking bag full of random pills.
Take more drugs.
Because I do think psychology was kind of like that at that era. Because I remember, like, when I went a lot, they would just give you anything.
Yep, they would.
And yeah, like Ativan, I took a lot of that. And that's basically just heroin light.
Yep.
You know, like the Diet Coke of heroin. Ambient, yeah, like a time-losing recipe where you know, cook weird shit in the middle of the night.
Yeah. It was actually, that is probably the reason why I never fucking did shit like that when I was in college. So when I was in high school, I went to one of those therapists that was just like, oh, you're fucking try this, try that. And it almost killed me. And I was the only one who knew that something was very, very wrong.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And I had to try and convince everyone. I was like 15 or something. And like, no, this is not the thing we should be doing, guys. Like, this is not. The shit that he had me on, I found out a few years later, was like pulled out of like usage for teens because it made them commit suicide in like enough numbers that they were like, oh fuck, we better stop doing this. And it's just like, I fucking told you guys, god damn it. Like,
I was trying to save all of these lives.
Yes.
Like, that's the worst possible side effect for a drug for depressed teens.
Thank you. It's the complete opposite of what it should be fucking doing.
Didn't want that to happen.
I think obviously Dr. Tuttle is a heightened version of that, but like there was just absolutely, you know, pharmacological profiteering of, and that's what psychology was for. I think a solid 10 years just. Yeah, put it in their brains and pay me, GlaxoSmithKline.
Yeah. There was she just like spouts out this crazy shit all the time. But there was like one time where there's one nugget of information that I didn't hate what she said.
Like, oh yeah.
I have it. I took a picture cuz I don't take notes anymore. Technology. She just says, I'm looking at this and I'm getting nervous because I'm looking at this. Okay. God damn it. The moment we start making generalizations, we give up our right to self-govern. Amidst all of that bullshit of like, rats are riddling the streets and cows shouldn't be milked because of blood spouting out of the like...
And she talks like an over-medicated person.
She does.
Yeah, sorry.
She's basically a holy fool, at least to the narrator, because the narrator thinks that this is like... She's like the center of her world, this like crazy fucking doctor.
It was kind of sad like when she's like, I never saw her again, and I was like, aw.
But at the same time, like to say something so incredibly prescient, like... right before 9/11, like, oh, fucking wonder. I wonder what that's doing there. I wonder what that means. Like,
Dr. Tuttle did 9/11.
Oh my god. But I also like. I mean, So Gabby and I, we were talking about this like before we started recording, that because it seems to me like it's a cop out that she basically does nothing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, she's kind of happy with life and like birds chirping and like mm-hmm. squirrels climbing trees. Like mm-hmm. she just goes out to the park and is like, oh, nature, this is nice. Like, sunshine, I'm better now. And it's like, well, number one, like, humans don't, like, you don't do nothing and then like every, like, your problem goes away.
Yeah.
And also, that's not how fucking character development works either. Like, you don't have someone do nothing and then just at the end they're fine. But maybe she has brain damage.
Could be. It really could be.
I do think that she didn't depict the detox process very, you know, it's just some weirdo's art project.
That like was pretty funny.
Filmed just her sleeping. I thought that was going to go somewhere and it never really did. She was just like, no. Oh, you know, people looked at it in galleries.
I dubbed Japanese over my footage.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like maybe if it had kept going after the, like, if like it showed her dealing with Reva, because I felt like that's the only real meaningful relationship in the book, and it's an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There's no non-abusive relationships in this book. There's no men who aren't terrible. boy, I lost track. My train of thought.
Everyone is terrible. I think
everyone
that's where we were.
Everyone is terrible in this book, and most of the world.
yep. I think that's what bothered me about the end, too, though, is that there was no development. There was no actual change.
And oh, that's yeah. If it kept going, yeah. Do you think she could have dealt, you know, do you think that you would have felt differently about it?
Maybe. I kind of, I love and hate at the same time that the person that she is closest to by the end of the book, she has never been around sober.
Yeah.
Like, she's always blacked out when she's around him. Mm-hmm. To the point where, like, she's, like, wearing this coat that he bought her while she was blacked out, apparently, for, like, months and months and months, and, mm-hmm. like, doesn't know where it came from. Like,
wasn't that
she
like
doesn't
an Amazon? I don't know. I remember certain parts of that.
Ping bought her the fur coat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he writes it
okay.
In a note, I think. So yeah. And then you're like, oh, that's like how long he's been in this story.
Yeah.
But, like, you just didn't know it.
She, like, acquires the coat, like, months before you realize that she's been going out with him while she's
yeah,
blacked
okay,
out.
Yeah,
and then she, like, finds the note at the
Polaroids
end.
The Polaroids of the party. Yeah, okay.
And it's just, like, she doesn't, she's, like, friends with this person and doesn't even know anything about him, basically. Because whenever they hang out, she's completely fucking blacked out.
I thought, yeah, like, that was one of the reasons I was interested to read this book. Because it's almost perversely non-eventful. Like, the whole book is an absence of progress. Then, like, I was just amazed to see that she did pull it off. I kind of get why she ended on that image, where it's like that sticks in your head. You're like, oh wow, important, you know, historic. Like, that's definitely unending.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just find it distasteful that they played the 9/11 card in the first place, or?
I just think that it's not. Maybe it's just my specific point of view, but I don't think that it was as shocking as maybe it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went to a prep school in Queens for high school, and there were 3,000 kids in my high school, and a lot of them had parents working mm-hmm. in the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
It was a shit show, and a lot of, I think when someone close to you dies unexpectedly, you always kind of, well, what if I had done this differently, or what if I had said this to them before they left the house, or like, what if? And I think that thinking that you recognize, like, one of the only distinguishable human figures in all of that footage, like thinking that you recognize them, that that's your person,
mm-hmm.
is a very, I think, very common phenomenon, and it's also just, I don't know, it didn't really surprise me, I think, because I would expect people to kind of feel that way.
It was almost inevitable, like more than just not surprising. There was an inevitability to it.
Right.
And I think that, like, see, yeah, it's some reflection of the guilt she felt for being such a shitty friend to Reva is, like, why you would, you know, see her face among this tragic footage. But
then it, like, reflected her old self, because yeah. She was like, and I was happy for Reva because she looked awake finally. And yeah. You're like, what? You are a terrible person. Yes, you've let go of your past, but you've let go too much. Like,
either that or she woke up in the Matrix and that, like, she's super happy because she thinks that she's, like, in the Matrix.
I'm up for any ending like that. That will please me all of the time.
Harrison Ford and Whoopi Goldberg should have been in the Matrix.
Yes.
Yep. Yes.
Mm-hmm. They really
Whoopi
should
Goldberg
be
should have been like God in the Matrix.
Oh God. Oh God.
Yeah. I like it. There's her life is just so wasted in such an interesting way, where she like lives in this very expensive apartment in the most exciting city in the world, and goes to a bodega and then immediately back home to watch Whoopi Goldberg and Harrison Ford VHSs. It's mentioned over and over again that she's beautiful, like a stunner, but it gives her no joy. It brings no happiness to her life. It's almost a burden. It just seems like the whole book is an indictment of the idea that you could be happy. Like,
yeah, there's always
you
something
idiot.
Else.
You think you can have everything and you still won't, you'll still envy your...
You're gorgeous, you're rich, you have a fucking swank apartment in fucking Manhattan.
That you don't pay for.
And
yeah.
You're miserable.
Yeah.
It's very, I feel like the beginning is very like Disney movie, where she's like this beautiful rich princess, like
yeah, Sleeping Beauty.
Dead parents, yeah. No responsibilities, like, and she wants to kill herself. Like, she wants to kill herself without actually admitting that she is trying to kill herself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, that last sentence of, like, envy for Reva underlines that pretty hard.
Which means she hasn't learned anything. Like,
no.
She's lying to her. Like, she goes out to the park and she's like, oh, everything's green and I'm around people and this is nice. And it's like, no, you're lying to yourself because you still are, like, looking at people dying and thinking, oh, this is wonderful for them.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, sometimes depression is that bad where it's just like the not. It's like, oh, I don't need to actively like medicate myself to sleep for a year today. Slightly better. Like, I'm walking around like a person. Look at me. I've definitely had those moments where
that's
it's like,
true.
I'm doing so much better. Yeah. It's like, you've watched 7 hours of Ken Burns documentaries.
You're licking pudding. You're licking pudding right now. I feel like it kind of, it could speak to society itself, though, as a lot of people go to work and then they just come home
yeah.
And then they do their home stuff. I don't know. Some people have hobbies. Some people watch TV, maybe watch Whoopi Goldberg and Harrison Ford all the time. But like, there's always something more that you want, especially
yeah.
If you're being constantly influenced by like what people tell you you want. Like when I was in high school, I thought like, if only I had clear skin, all of my problems would go away. Like, that's what it was for me. I was just like, if I'd never get a pimple again, like, and that's what I like focused on. And then after that, it's like, oh no, I still hate myself.
Oh
I have to do like self work. I have to figure out what I actually like to do. Like I can't just rub my face with acne medicine for the rest of my life. Like, that's not how it works.
If I may, you're clean and clear and under control. Give it up for Neutrogena, secret sponsors of this podcast.
I think that's a really... I mean, that's it, though, isn't it? Like, everyone has that one thing. Where, oh, if this about my life was different, I would be happy.
Yeah, and it's constantly evolving. Like, I think... If I get better at stand-up, if I get better at roller, like, I get more fit. And those things make me happy, and those are, like, those goals are driving me towards something. But when you have goals that are literally just, like, appearances or something that gets you nowhere, but you're just like thinking that these objects are going to make you happy. It's never going to happen. Like, if I just get these fancy pieces of furniture from Europe, people are going to come over all the time. Like, no.
If I fall asleep on the Long Island Railroad in my gorgeous white fur coat, people will like me. And that, like, that's because all that stuff is about trying to control other people's perceptions of you, mm-hmm. and you can't do that. So, yeah, it's a losing game, folks. Listeners, just go to therapy. You'll be fine. Just, you know, work on yourselves. You'll be fine.
Go to a licensed practitioner and not a Dr. Tuttle at, like, Quack. I do feel like I almost want to put a trigger warning at the beginning of this podcast. It's like, because we really went full Werner Herzog with like the idea of happiness is a futility.
I mean, honestly, if you know anything about the book going in, like, yeah, you fucking get what you deserve listening to this.
Do you have any other like comments about her as a writer? Is there any like, because she does, I think she's got one of the most like definitive voices, like there's no mistaking this for anybody else. There's like, and reading Eileen too, you see the sort of like obsession with how gross sex is and like how gross bodies are.
Because it's gross.
it is gross. I feel like that's not something, it's not something you see written about often, especially not, you know, by a woman in the point of view of a woman.
Maybe not, it's not written about often in a way that's not fantasized. Like, there's lots of sex fiction where it makes it seem, like, glorified. But she's stripping it down pretty well. Where, like, he really liked it when he put his penis in my mouth and... Yeah. Then he came.
The part where he's like, the three times he's ever gone down on me, he's like, what a hero. such a good guy.
Yeah. She doesn't get any pleasure out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really would have liked it if he died on 9/11.
Throw us a bone.
Come on.
No, I think she has a really distinct and just kind of relentless style of storytelling. She doesn't spare anyone, including the reader. So trigger warning again. but it's also, I think part of it is like the subject matter, because not a lot of women want to talk about that stuff, and not a lot of men want to hear it. So it's hard to get that shit published by a major publishing house.
She does bring up, that doesn't really have to do with that. she uses like a lot of references, almost like Haruki Murakami. Like, he's constantly referencing jazz and like all these, songs and musicians and movies and books that you'd have to look up
because
there's so many. And I thought that was kind of fun. To be like, oh, I don't know this person. And then you look them up and you're like, okay, that's very, I get what she's saying.
Yeah. I do think like Murakami is like trying to show off a little bit, where he's like, I listen to Chopin, you know. And these were such lowbrow, like presumed innocent or, you know, sister act. I don't know why, but I found that delightful every time. There's like a very descriptive couple paragraphs where she's imagining what Whoopi Goldberg's vagina looks like.
Oh, yeah. That is in the book. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's weird. But for not liking the end of this book that much, I want to read everything she's written. I don't know. Same. I think it's so distinctive and so interesting. There's not many people that I've read that are like her.
It makes me laugh.
Yeah, it was very funny.
It definitely makes me laugh because... The way that she writes is like I'm thinking of one moment where Dr. Tuttle is like, oh, what are you going to be for Halloween? Amidst all the things that she's saying, and she says, I think I'll be a ghost. And it's like, wake up, Dr. Tuttle. Come on.
Yeah, I read that. She's like, oh, yeah, economical. Very good.
Yeah. Like, you're half dead already. Great. You're on your way there. I actually, my boyfriend didn't want to read this book because he saw something about it that made him think that it was supposed to be funny. Like, that it was, like, trying to be, like, a humorous book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, it is funny. It's funny in a way that, like, it's not actually fun. Like, she's not actually, like, making light of any of this shit. It's just funny because it's fucking stupid and fucked up.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's so bleak. It's yes. So absurdly dark that you really have no choice but to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why so many comics are depressed. Why so many depressives do stand-up comedy.
I mean, you could also take a bunch of drugs and sleep for a year.
I don't have the funds. I don't know.
I don't have the funds. I've never been to a therapist or a psychiatrist.
I mean, you know.
I don't know what that would be like. I've always, like, dealt with my problems. A lot of other ways.
The listeners can't
just deal with him in the rink.
There was a look of steely resolve flashed across Gabby's face.
All of the memories.
It was a real Mad Max face.
I survived this shit, you know. But it's interesting to think about. Yeah. Like, I could have like made a lot of less bad decisions if I had gone to someone for help, but maybe someone
not necessarily
as well as like I've always had that thought.
There's a lot of people who are bad at that,
right?
That job.
And this book is like very true in a sense. Like reality is in this book.
Tuttle is a slight exaggeration of how it was. And because when I was a teenager and not really like fully in control of what I got to intake and not intake, I've been very soured on psychotropic medicine since then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those people who's like, give up your pills. I'm not a Scientologist or anything. But I will never take them again because of how awful that was. Because that's why it bothered me how like, she sort of glossed over the detox process with that art project because it's fucking gnarly. I would get the shakes. Like, I had to pull over. I was driving, and I started shaking so bad I had to pull over, and I had to get somebody to pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, like, it's seriously fucked up. We don't know really what they do all the time. We just feed them to people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I got some. They mailed me some from Pfizer. Go for it.
Samples. Yeah, the fact that you can just give people samples of medication. It's like, I just opened up this magazine someday, like instead of perfume. That's what I like to imagine.
Oh, but there's a fucking story there. Holy shit.
Like, mail in your coupon and you get your free year of Celexa. Clip off the cereal box tops, kids.
Oh, collect them for some goodies at the end.
Empty the jar and we'll give you a Happy Meal toy you'll be too dull to play with.
This is pretty much the way the book is funny.
Yes, yes.
Right, yeah. Making fun of.
You guys nailed it.
It's very much up my alley, my precise sense of humor. So I really did. Yeah, it's weird that I enjoyed it even though it upset me a lot.
Yep.
I think we've probably rambled. Any concluding thoughts and then maybe plugs?
Don't do drugs, kids.
Don't try.
At least not pharmaceuticals.
Love yourself, and that's a hard one because like you can't just do it like now. Work on it. Find out what you like. Like, nope. A lot of people still don't know what they like because you just do what you're told. That's it. And then you go to business school and you work in an office.
Also, don't be someone else's fucking art project. Make your own goddamn art, even if it's crappy. Make your own fucking shit.
Yep.
I do think if there is any sort of glimmer of hope, because from the very informative two-thirds of this New Yorker profile I read, it sounds like Autessa Mosfeg is very much depressed in this way, and that the avenue out she found about is writing, because that's another thing that's very refreshing about her. It's like, I'm a fucking great writer. Like, my judgments are sound. I know exactly what the fuck I'm doing. Like, and I think that having that command over her craft, not being Ping's art project, but making her own, I think that, like, that's her, that's where she's found her meaning. And it is refreshing to read, you know, not to beat this note too many times, but, like, a woman writer who's not apologizing for herself, who's arrogant, like, male writers are always are. I can't wait to see what she does. I think there's greatness in her. And yeah, that's it. Read the book, guys.
Read it.
Did we have something, a passage to end on? Do we want maybe Gabby to read more snippets of Dr. Tuttle's insane ravings?
Want a couple Tuttle.
Sorry. Let's see.
The Tuttle Scuttlebutt, everybody. That's what we're getting.
Tuttle Scuttle. Let's see. Well, I'll just. Should I read a long one?
Sure. Read whatever. We usually like to bookend with a two, but we'll do plugs after you read.
Okay. Plugs. Let's see. Gray days spent staring down at sidewalks, skipping classes, shopping for things I'd never wear, paying through the nose for a gay guy to put a tube up my asshole and rub my stomach. Tell me how much better I would feel once my colon was clean. I'm not great at reading aloud. Together we watched little flakes of shit flowing through the outgoing tube. His voice was soft but enthusiastic. You're doing great, doll, he'd say. More often than I needed, I'd get face peels and pedicures, massages, waxing, haircuts. That was how I mourned, I guess. I paid strangers to make me feel good. I might as well have hired a prostitute, I thought.
Self-care is tough. Hey. And yeah. Very gross. Very gross. Plugs, Gabby? That's a poor choice of words after colonic.
Assholes.
Oh, did we do
hey.
Do we want to do also reds too this month?
Oh, yeah. I did some.
Hell yeah. Did you do some?
What is this?
Did you read something else this month?
I am almost ashamed to admit that this is the first book I've finished in a long time.
Hell yeah. Congratulations.
It's not about shame. It's about...
I start books a lot, and then I stop reading them.
Well, that means they're shitty and you should find something else. Yeah.
I read Based on a True Story by Norm Macdonald, which is very, very funny. It's completely... I have a way of like not being able to say that, like, you're very funny without sounding like such a dick. He's legitimately one of my favorite comedians in the world. I laughed out loud reading a book. It's very rare. But God, I just can't get that note of smugness. He's very funny. No, it's hilarious. It's like a completely made up autobiography.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So it's just like, he starts like, so I was writing on SNL and then I took a kid on a seal hunt. Like, so I recommend that. And yeah, some of Eileen, but then, you know, High Plains and all. You know, got busy. What about you?
So I'm actually going to talk about my also reads, and then I'm going to transition into plugging shit. I also read this month, I was gifted a really fucking awesome edition of Dracula.
Oh.
So I reread that for the first time in years, and it totally fucking holds up, you guys. And then I am currently reading a book about the Siege of Leningrad. That is just called Leningrad. It's by Anna Reid, who she was a reporter for a long time. I think that it's like the first and maybe still the only English history of the siege written since the Soviet archives opened up in the 90s. It's fucking bananas. And both of those were kind of part of a project I'm working, like it's kind of research for a story that I'm working on now. Which I will hopefully read some of at Queen City Companion, which is happening September 6th here at Mutiny at 8 o'clock. So everyone who's listening to this should come to that and listen to my shit some more.
Also, tune into the Mutiny Transmissions feed, where they can listen to episodes at their leisure if they can't make it to the Mutiny Information Cafe, Denver's most punk rock bookstore. You guys, do come in if you can, though, and listen to this. You missed all of Brian Flynn's elaborate pantomimes if you're just at home listener.
But they heard him. I think they heard him, maybe.
You heard the object work. It's flawless.
So when I was still going to hardcore shows when I was in high school.
Hardcore.
There was this band. They were fucking terrible. But every one of their shows, they would just have he didn't do anything. He was a member of the band. He didn't fucking do anything except he would sit shirtless on a lawn chair next to the stage and just get fucking wasted during their set. And I feel like Brian should like sit on the stage with us, just wildly gesticulating.
He's already wasted.
Throughout the. Yes, you can keep your shirt on, Brian.
Speaking of sitting next to performers and drinking, Designated Drunkard, a comedy drinking game. First Saturday of every month, 7 p.m., El Torito's Comedy Room Room. Gabby, any plugs? Did we already do this?
I think that something that people would hear by the time this comes out, September 19th, I am on Laugh Night on the Earth. I think that's what it's called.
That's very fun.
Zach
that's
Moss's
the,
show.
Yeah, the Alamo Barfly. Yeah.
Yes, Alamo Barfly, 8 p.m.
Well, I mean, we're doing things like that. I'm also doing the Mile High Movie Roast of Fatal Attraction on September 21st, which I have not seen. I'm going to watch it for the first time tomorrow.
If we're doing that, I will also...
We're just playing plug poker. Like, I raise you your Barfly okay. show. And
okay. I'll also be hanging out at home alone watching True Blood because I haven't watched it. And you know what? Someone said too, and I said, I have the time.
Hell yeah.
It gets disappointing a couple seasons in. I'll leave it at that.
That's it. Okay.
Spoilers.
I didn't say the most spoily thing. It's like not everyone can be a magical thing. You ruin the magic of everyone's magic. Okay. We don't need to get into this now. Thank you so much for listening. One more round of applause for my co-host, Jen Colick, and my guest, Gabby Gutierrez-Reed. I'm Byron Graham. Thank you for listening to the Mutiny Book Club podcast.
Mutiny Book Club, Mutiny Book Club, Mutiny Book Club. Now let's do a short one for him. Mutiny Book Club.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.